Hey guys, you're listening and watching Inside iOS Dev, a show about real-world iOS development, here with your host, Andrew Roan.
And Alex Bush.
Today we're going to talk about Alex, what he's learned at Uber. He's been there now 7 months now. I don't think we haven't formally talked about it on the podcast. I'm sure you've heard him mention it. So we're going to talk a little bit about him, the process of him joining, and then kind of more then jump into what he's learned since he's been there. Because I think the technical things that he's learned there is probably the most interesting, at least to me.
Right.
So, tell us kind of like maybe just start us off. Tell us the story of like how you got there and what the interview process was like.
Essentially, I decided to do consulting rather than be an employee, which I was at ThoughtWorks before that. And at the end of the day, roughly speaking, I just contacted a recruiter and they happened to be looking for people for a position at Uber.
Okay.
For an iOS developer to join one of the new teams that they were, one of the projects they were working on at the time. And then I talked to the recruiter. They set up a first phone interview. It was just sort of your normal screening for, oh, do you know anything about iOS, right? You claim that you've been working with it for so long, but let's see it. I was, as far as I remember, like a 30-minute conversation.
I bet you your book, The iOS Interview Guide, helped a little bit. Available where?
Came in handy. Same place, iOSinterviewguide.com. So check it out, guys.
Okay.
But after that, they set up another interview, screen sharing. I don't remember what it was. Either screen sharing or you do one of those tools to show the code as you type it. And there it was an hour interview, I believe.
Okay.
And that one was more involved, architecture design pattern, more heavy on that, a type of interview where I was given a task to design a game.
Okay.
I forgot the game actually, but wasn't something too crazy. It was more or less, you know, reasonable.
Okay.
And the focus was more sort of, let's see how you design it rather than have an algorithm and a, you know, loop working properly there, which I like.
Obviously, you passed that. And then what was the next stage?
And the next stage, I just talked to engineering manager. He kind of got an idea from me what I'm looking for. Because for me, as I said, I was transitioning to consulting full time. And kind of we talked about that.
You prefer to be a consultant.
Yeah, and I prefer to be a consultant.
That's just your personal work style.
Now I've been there for 7 months now. Working on that new Uber Rentals. That's the new product that they have. Effectively, instead of renting a car for someone to drive you somewhere, your normal Uber X, you can actually now rent a car for yourself. Right?
It's like get around.
Just sort of like get around.
You know, zip car or something.
Yep.
Right.
And that's the team I joined, and that's what I'm working on there.
Is that fully? I don't think that's fully rolled out, right?
It's rolled out in San Francisco and one more city.
Cool. So now you're in the machinations of the Uber, because it's to me it's a giant organization. I remember when I went in the building, it's huge. There's tons of people. I'm curious, what is interesting about Uber, the organization working there, and like maybe what surprised you?
So that was actually one of those things that surprised me the most, how big they are.
Right. How big is the iOS and like Android mobile team?
So on our internal chat channel, just for iOS devs, there are 120 people or something like that.
Right.
That's the biggest iOS team I worked at. Like that's just huge.
How many again? Sorry.
Like, 120 people.
120 people for just the iOS.
Just
app.
The iOS.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And
you
would, I have a question about
you
that,
would
but
think
continue.
Why, but
yeah, I want to dig in why, but I want you to continue.
No, essentially, that was one of those things. And another huge thing that surprised me, how they structured everything architecturally so that many people can work simultaneously on the same application.
Okay, and I think that's the most interesting part of this whole conversation, and probably it's going to go into the rib architecture, I'd imagine.
Yep.
Before we get into that, I have a question. So it was 120-something people for the iOS app only.
Right, and like, you know, not all of them work on the same app, but because they have, what, the rider app, the driver app, but still.
I mean, okay, let's say 60 people, even then, half on the main Uber app. Why do you need so many people? Like, I see apps with indie developers with one guy, you know, two people, and they have, you know, I don't know, potentially millions of users. What's going on?
Right.
Like, just throwing bodies at a problem, or like, what's happening?
So essentially, seemingly that's the case, right? Like, what's going on? You can have like five people or something, but right. even you guys at Reddit, you have what? 30?
No, it's like 20 that. Something.
20.
Yeah.
But still iOS, a lot, right?
That's a lot.
Essentially, the whole thing structured the way that... they wrote a few articles about that and the reasoning, but for main apps, for Rider and for Driver, they switched to monorepo, so-called monorepo. Instead of having things in multiple repositories, sort of scoured across... multiple places, they put everything in monorepo so that it's easier to build, it's easier to sort of track changes and make changes as you go, as you develop things. And also the sort of the reason why there are so many people, there are a lot of small corners and pockets, if you will, of the application there that you don't know about, which are big on their own. They're effectively smaller apps within a bigger app.
Right.
And yeah. Like my team, for example, it's just a team of three iOS devs, right? Three iOS, three Android, and, right. and several backend people. We are a sort of cross-functional standalone team within the organization. And the code part of the code that we work on is almost completely isolated from everything else. Because thanks to that architecture, right? And that way, this is why we have... Uber has so many people, right? Because you have multiple small teams working on different things.
That app that you're working on is like literally just an app in itself. So you have, like you were saying earlier, it's like you have apps within the app, right? And then also I think the other thing that people don't get when you work for companies where you have tons of, not only tons of users, but they're all over the world. Things like you have to consider like localization. There's things for different parts of the world where it's going to be used, right. even different laws, even... analytics, things like that, instrumenting analytics, and just lots of edge cases like that come up.
So yes, and everything that you listed and more is actually it's part. Those things are part of the overarching platform. There's also on top of there's a platform built within Uber on top of iOS and Android platforms. So essentially, we have shared libraries that are shared commonly. By teams within one app and also across apps as well.
Okay.
So essentially, there is a lot, right? And some people are actually dedicated to just work on the platform stuff. Mm. Like there's a UI platform team. There's a, I forgot the name, sort of like a networking team, or utilities, right. So on. And they spend time working on, roughly speaking, tools so that people like me can use it,
right? Feature
within,
teams
within our
features. We have something similar at Reddit where we have Apps Kit, Apps Infra, which is the team that I'm on. It's me and I think three other people now, we kind of basically do the same thing. We try to create these reusable components that other people can use. The feature team specifically
makes it a unified experience, right? And
yeah,
streamlines things actually, because a lot of stuff was already built for us. We just reuse components, let's say, if it's UI.
Right.
And definitely all the networking.
Right.
What we do build essentially at the end of the day is the business logic for the new stuff, which is great. That's like what you want to be building rather than have, you know, build the plumbing.
Yeah, you don't want to redo the plumbing that potentially other people could have just done and you reuse. Okay, so I don't know where to start because I feel like there's a big thing to bite off. So do you want to start describing the rib architecture? Or do you want to start describing more of this? Like you said, there is the shared foundation.
So essentially, I think let's talk more about ribs and sort of that part of the architecture, because I can speak more for that.
Okay.
Because I worked with it.
Great.
The platform things, I do
you
use
just consume it.
I do use them. I talk to platform people occasionally.
Right.
But I'm not really the one
in the trenches.
But essentially, rib, like, we probably should have a different conversation, kind of deeper dive into riblets specifically architecture. But overall, it's what is it? Router Interactor Builder, right? That's what it stands mm-hmm. for. Essentially, your entire, the idea is that your entire application is actually, funny enough, a composite design pattern,
mm-hmm.
like from sort of higher level, higher perspective. And your entire app is broken down into a collection of ribs, right? And everything starts with your root rib.
Okay.
And then goes down into, well, individual ribs that are either... A rib is a piece of business logic.
Okay.
It could have UI or it could not have UI. So it could be headless or with UI.
Okay.
Depending on your use case. And every rib can have multiple children ribs. And the communication goes sort of a broadcasted down through streams to all the children or whoever down the tree, and through delegation back to the parent if you need to.
Mm-hmm. To the parent rib.
Parent rib, yeah. And yeah, and essentially that gives you this tree structure. But at the end of the day, what I work on and other people work on, right, the specific feature or product teams, we work on, in that tree, there is one spot, like an entry point rib for our product, and that's where everything starts for us.
So there's this pre-existing tree structure, basically, right. of these ribs, and then they say, wherever, however y'all decide to give the entry point for when your rental rib is...
Which is, as an example of that, would be you go to the menu and you hit rentals button.
Right, and so that's your entry point, clicked. And then that's on the tap.
Yeah.
Then it fires up, and now your rib gets attached to this tree. Our world
starts.
Yeah. And then now you're part of this composite tree.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay.
But we're not sort of in a sense of we're isolated for the code change from the rest of the app that way, right? We cannot, by changing things in our...
You're in your sandbox.
Sandbox, yeah. Right. Yeah. We're not changing anything anywhere else. We could go and change sort of platform code, but it goes through reviews and stuff of the platform team.
Effectively, yeah. Effectively, you can, I'd imagine, or like right. It's difficult.
It is and it is not. In a sense, like it's difficult because of all the safeguards, but then it's easy to actually do because it's one monorepo. That's okay. Sort of the advantage.
Right.
One of the reasons they decided to do that. And it makes sense because otherwise you have to go to a standalone repository, let's say if it's CocoaPods or something, repository, and you change code there, and only then the library gets deployed, right? And
right.
Everyone needs
right.
to pull
to, like,
new
wait
version,
for it to come through,
all
to
of that.
Through,
yeah,
yeah.
But nevertheless, though, on the code level, it's standalone and sandboxed, and also it's sandboxed on the Swift level too. So our thing, our entire product feature thing, is a module, Swift module.
Mm.
So that way, all of those access control things like public, internal, all of that's used now, actually, because, you know, if you want to expose something outside of your module, you have to make it actually public.
Interesting.
Because the default thing for a function or a property is not public, it's internal for the module.
So you have access control on the module level.
Right. Because, like, if you build your normal application, you just have one module for an application, and you never think about it. To you, if you don't have a prefix, that sort of effectively means it's public for the rest of your app, because it's one module. But in this case, not anymore. You actually need to explicitly say.
Is there a module per a rib? Is there a mapping? Or is
no. So a module, there's a module per product, if you will, or sort of a library thing.
I get it. So, like, the module is the car rental module,
yeah.
And then within there, y'all might have several ribs that compose that module, right? Is that it?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
And yeah, again, as I said before, that everything starts with that one entry point rib, the root rib, if you will, for your product, for your module, rather.
Right.
And yeah.
So yeah, I want to go down a little bit deeper and. Actually, I'm really interested in the rib architecture at Uber. Even before you started working there, I was interested because we did a lot of refactoring work at Reddit. And so I was, Uber, on their website or YouTube, somewhere I watched their videos, and you can watch in detail. They've made many videos explaining this, the rib architecture and things
right.
like scoping and things like that that they've implemented.
They also open source it.
And it's also open source, so you can do that. I'm curious, though, to kind of, like, go a little bit more concrete. Can you talk about also, I think, can you talk about a little bit how RIB architecture is inspired by clean architecture principles?
Right. So essentially, this is sort of partially the reason why I liked it a lot. In a nutshell, RIB architecture is stripped down and simplified version of Viper, which is an implementation of clean architecture on iOS. Mm-hmm. So with if I can recall the differences off the top of my head, with Viper, you have... That's also an acronym, right?
It's a view, interactor, presenter, entity, router.
Right, right. So with RIB architecture, you just throw away view and what is
it? Well, so your view and presenter is optional, right? Since you can have headless RIBs.
You do have your router, you do have your interactor, and you have your builder.
Right.
And the builder is not part of... Viper, I believe.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
I think they have something. I think there have been attempts to basically make something like a builder.
Right.
But maybe we should explain what the builder
is. Yes. So essentially, right. The builder, it's... we talked about it multiple times on different episodes. It's that the... Always with your architecture and dependency injection, where you extract things and push things outside and just inject them, you keep pushing them away and away and deferring the decision... decision making on what specific concrete thing to instantiate as your one of your dependency objects. As you do that, it naturally you end up with in some dirty place where all the wiring happens, right? And again, as we said before, roughly speaking, it's a main function of your app when everything starts.
So by dirty, you mean y'all use dependency injection for the benefits it provides, such as unit testing and looser coupling. And so that means those classes that have their dependencies injected are not going to be making their dependencies, meaning they're not going to call alloc init or some init method.
Yes.
They're going to instead have them injected. And if you keep going back and back and back, the problem of like, well, where do we finally create them, right? Where do we know these true concretions where we call that initialize? That's in the builder.
That's in the builder.
Okay.
So essentially, because otherwise, if in this tree structure thing, then if you keep pushing it like that, it's going to be all in the very roots of everything, right? That
just is your app too delegate much. Just loads everything.
Yeah, that is too much.
Right.
You don't want to have that. That's unreasonable and not useful.
Sounds,
yeah. Instead, you want to encapsulate that in a way within, sort of in a place related to each RIB. And that's the builder. That is the thing that sets it up, right? It in turn, the builder, right? And in turn, it also actually can have things injected in it. And it quite most of the time it does.
The builder has things injected.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it has its own dependency. And that is normally the parent RIB that called it.
Okay.
And that thing also has a parent RIB that called it and so on up until the very root of everything.
Interesting.
Right. Which is, again, your main function, effectively. So you do still do that. It's just more sane and sort of spread out.
Yeah. I think it's the concept of the scoping thing, right? It's the application of that. You have different scopes of your application.
Exactly. Yeah. Essentially, so that's sort of the main entry point for your RIBs. You have to use a builder to create it, to build it, before you can attach it to your tree.
So you have this builder, and then you call builder.build, maybe? Something like that? And it returns... I don't know. Or how does it work?
So essentially, what happens is you have your... Before that happens, you need to route... You sort of say, I want to route to that RIB, whatever that RIB is.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say... An example, just to sort of give you an idea. An example of a RIB could be an entire screen, right? Let's say help screen. You have your... Imagine Uber app and you have help button at the top right corner.
Sure.
You tap that and a screen gets presented.
Okay.
So that whole thing is a RIB with a view, right? So let's call it a help RIB. So before you get it on the screen, you use a router. Your router within your current RIB and you say route to this help RIB.
Mm.
Internally, that router has a reference to a help RIB builder. It builds a router and interactor for it, And then it gives you a router that you can use to, well, actually physically like route to, because it has a reference to your UI, to your view, to do that. And that's another part of it, the router, right? So that is the thing that holds a reference to your view controllers, whatever you have. And it knows how to route to ribs and route away from them.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, it holds a state. It's a bit weird. It's hard to explain. It's better with a code sample, but it holds a state of what rib is presented on the screen at the time,
mm-hmm.
right? What was routed to and how to route away from that.
Okay.
Again, in terms of more specific stuff like, do we push or pop if it's iOS?
So that's encapsulated internally within the router because it knows the details of iOS or Android, wherever it's implemented.
Right. To a degree, there's also, there are abstractions. So everything's a protocol, like literally everything. They push it to that extreme, and I love it because that makes everything easier in unit testing specifically. They also abstracted out view controller part. So like there is actually a protocol view controllable or something like that. Sort of abstracts that out. And then within it, you have the view controller.
Mm-hmm.
And effectively view controllers implement that protocol. But anyway, yeah. But to get back to the sort of overview of ribs. And the last part of it is in the meat of it. If you think about it, is interactor, right? So interactor is actually the most interesting part where business logic happens. This is the place where you put your networking calls, your response mapping code, right? I mean, you should abstract it out, but if you don't know where else to put it, you put it there.
Right.
There's your storage logic the same way. Like need to cache your response. And store it and tell someone or something to do that, you do it in the interactor, right? And coordinate all of that. Interactor also tells presenter, it has a reference to presenter, to display something on the screen or to hide something or do any other presentation logic, right? And in turn, presenter, if you have one, right, in the case of ribs that have a view, the presenter itself actually has a reference to an actual concrete view piece, let's say view controller, and it knows, well, how to show things.
When you say reference to a concrete piece, though, you mean through an interface?
Yes.
Right?
Okay. Yes, through that sort of view controllable.
Right. It doesn't actually have access to a UI view controller, for instance.
No.
Right.
No.
Okay.
But UI view controller implements a protocol, I forgot the name, but... sort of a like presentable listener or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the presenter says, like do this or do that.
Right.
And as an example of what presenter does within itself, it's not just a dumb delegate to the view. So presenter itself might, let's say, create view models after it's given some model objects by the interactor.
Right.
And then it does whatever necessary
transformation of the data to prepare it to show on the view.
And then gives it to view, and view just works with the view models, for example.
Presenters are optional. Can you explain why?
So in some scenarios, rare, but some scenarios, you might want to have a rib that doesn't have a view because you just care about the logic in that thing, and you want to encapsulate some business logic rather than some thing that, at the end of the day, changes UI, right? Or presents things on the screen. As an example, it could be a background process that uploads pictures off the top of my head or something like that to the backend, or does some computation like that. And it does not make sense to have that in your maybe already overblown rib, right?
Right.
So instead, you encapsulate it into some other rib. You attach it the same way. There is a lifecycle. That the platform gives you, the whole framework gives you a life cycle as well to your ribs, and they have callbacks just like view controller would on did load and stuff like that.
Right.
They have the on attach detach callbacks. But same way for a headless rib, you would attach it just like any normal rib, and you route to it. There's nothing to.
There's no visual
routing.
Routing. that the user sees.
But there is still this attach and lifecycle
right.
events. And then same way, when the lifecycle events kick in, you do your logic, whatever that is, say networking request.
Interesting. Can you, how does this differ from Viper? Why not just use Viper?
So the difference, and I'm still researching on that, why specifically they sort of decided to do their own thing, all their own implementation of clean architecture. But as far as I know, sort of in a nutshell, the Viper architecture was more presenter heavy, meaning everything was focused on the UI piece and tied to it. So things could not exist outside of a UI part.
The composite tree structure was intimately tied to some visual element right. on the screen, and oftentimes in software, like you were explaining earlier with this image uploader example, that thing didn't have a corresponding view implementation, right? So in the Viper world, it wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
So the ribs is a way to, you create these ribs that can exist and have this business logic without a corresponding, so it's just like view driven than Viper basically.
Right.
Which is like, so then it's more business logic driven.
It is.
Which sounds
purely
nice to me.
It's, yeah. So it also makes way more sense from an architectural perspective, because then you don't tie yourself explicitly to UI, meaning your, and it, that is literally the case, actually. Your architecture overall, the ribs architecture, their names, what they do, how they behave, what they route to, the logic they do, is exactly the same and is designed by both iOS developers and Android in collaboration. So you, that help rib, literally exactly the same one exists on Android platform. And it does the same stuff. The, well, it's written in Java in this case.
Or Kotlin.
Or Kotlin, yeah.
Yeah.
But it differs on the detail of like, oh, language is a bit different that implements it. But specifically, it differs on the UI part, because Android has their own thing there.
Okay. So,
but yeah.
Yeah, we're hitting the 30-minute mark here just about, so I want to kind of like wrap up, and I know this is a lot and probably it wasn't enough time to really explain it, so we'll maybe put a link to the rib architecture in the show notes.
We should have more episodes too,
and yeah, we can do more episodes to do more deep dive, especially talk about Viper and ribs and compare and contrast and go more in depth. I have some questions. Is this overkill? How do developers feel about it, and making a protocol for everything, having this huge architecture, this tree that they have to live in? What's it like?
It depends, but overall good. So essentially, there are people who like it and people who don't like it.
And what is that percentage?
It's very anecdotal. Like, and I don't know.
It's, I mean, 50-50, so, 50, sort of 20?
From the people I interacted with, 50-50.
Okay, so
maybe 60 who like sometimes.
So it's pretty evenly split. Yeah. I just wanted to know if it's like 90-10 or like, you know, 80-20, but it's kind of evenly split.
Right, although people who don't like it, again, anecdotally from the people I spoke to, they still acknowledge the benefits.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like it in a sense that, oh my God, I have to do so much to change in a little thing. Well, again, seemingly, right? You, roughly speaking, you change some function signature. That probably has to go through a bunch of protocol changes as well. Mm-hmm. Because, well, protocols. So it's just tedious sometimes, annoying.
Right.
But it gives you an advantage of that sandboxing, right? That the whole architecture sandboxes you, so we don't change other people's stuff, and they don't change ours, thank God, right? And it enforces composability of things. So that each one of those ribs, since it's a clear-cut protocol and clear-cut business logic case contained within itself, can be reused anywhere else, actually even outside of your module in someone else's module, like that, well, again, help screen thing, which we can call anywhere, right, across the whole thing. That's very useful. That's not tied and coupled to a specific thing. And unit testing. So the unit testing is amazing with this approach. Everything has its own sort of pocket corner place,
mm-hmm.
right? And of course, you can go you know, creative and more, be more leaning, if you will, or whatever it's called, to, like when you implement your own things there, like let's say your own caching storage thingy for your own module, right?
Sure.
You can, you don't have to, if there's no case for it, you don't have to use some platform thing built for you. Just roll your own, right? Like, for example, in our case, we have a lot of, effectively, they're actually storage objects that are just called different. We have streams. Essentially, ribs, they either create or pass down stream objects, which broadcast changes and can receive changes. And we have mutable and immutable streams. And typically, your parent rib owns a mutable stream. Let's say it's a map heavy application, a stream of locations or like car rentals on the map. This rib, the parent rib, could change it because the user, does search or something, right? So your list of pings changes. But then down the stream, the child ribs, they just get the immutable one.
Mm-hmm.
And they just observe the changes and do whatever necessary things to the data that they need to do. Let's say display it in another part of it, maybe process.
Are these streams like the RX Swift streams?
Oh, yes, they are. So that the RX thing is the glue across the whole thing.
Interesting.
That's another.
I feel
topic.
Like that's. Yeah, I know. Like yeah. This is a huge topic.
But sorry, back to finish answering the question. Some people like it, some don't. There is a huge benefit, in my opinion, for the team size to have that set up.
Okay, so then,
because they had MVC before and it blew up.
What's the number then you would put on a team size where this starts paying off?
That's a good question.
20, 30?
Off top of my head, yes. Something like that. Like above 25 or 30 people. You probably want to have that.
Below and that, would it be a little too heavy?
I think so. Although there's an asterisk to that. If you just have one product, roughly speaking, right? And you don't need that sort of, you don't need to separate things, have apps within the bigger app, maybe not.
Okay.
But if you do, go ahead. It will benefit you. But yeah, it's hard. Like I personally actually, even though it's an overkill, like on a brand new project, maybe not by myself, but with like five other devs, I would go for rib architecture.
Okay. Okay. I have another question. I've heard this critique before with using the RX Swift, which is the functional reactive programming.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard the critique where, especially on projects of your size and team size, that it gets out of control and you have these ripples of changes where you might change one little value and it ripples out to this huge composite tree and you just like, it's hard to track down. Have you found that? Or do most people enjoy this, using this approach?
So that's a valid concern and I actually experienced that too myself. The way Uber manages that, and it seems to be working, I actually like it. But again, that's a bigger, different conversation. Yeah. But I'll just kind of give you an idea. The protocol, mutable immutable protocols that I spoke of,
right,
that helps with that because it clearly defines who does what, who changes and who consumes,
mm-hmm,
roughly speaking. So that helps. And another thing is that it's a rule that's enforced sort of implicitly. I believe there is documentation about it internally, but there are no tools that enforce it. When you use streams, you want to broadcast through streams down to all the children down the tree. You never broadcast back up. If you want to broadcast back up to parent, you do it through delegation, like the normal Apple delegate
pattern
call. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And weak reference and all of that.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's because then you'll have the one-way data flow, at least for the reactive changes. And so then it becomes a little more manageable in terms of holding that in your head.
But if your rib done the work and is done and needs to tell the parent, here you go, I'm done, here's the data or something like that, then it's a delegate. because the parent rib is the sole single listener of the child rib.
Okay.
But then the parent can might have multiple children, so that change, if any change happens, it's broadcasted through streams down to all of them, if there are multiple listening.
Okay. I feel like we're getting here. Yeah. We're almost at the 40-minute mark. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, there is a lot to talk about there.
I feel like, honestly,
we just scratched the surface.
Yeah, that's a lot.
But so far, this is my favorite architecture of all time on the front end, actually. Like, I have not seen the better implementation of, well, clean architecture.
Okay.
So, yeah, I learned a lot. I enjoy it.
Speaking of which, we are wanting to start a screencast where we talk about clean architecture as well as other architectures implementing them, the popular ones like Model View Presenter, Model View View Model.
Yeah, we'll announce sort of more details about that, but something to keep in mind. We're like working on that if you're guys interested.
Yeah, let us know. Contact us, hello@insideiosdev.com, and then also on Twitter @insideiosdev.
Yeah. We'll see you next time, guys.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.